Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, sir. Wednesday, the day before the big game. Okay, first thing I'd like to do is every week I take the liberty of posting the show on various pages on Facebook, such as CFL is the best football, Double Blue Toronto, Toronto Argonauts Fan Club, Baltimore Stallions, Red Black Nation, Bring Football Back to Ottawa, CFL Players and Staff, AFL, CIFL, UIFL, CPIFL, etc., and of course the Argo pages, and that is where I inform you folks that are near your computer at some point. You can, you know, touch the link and listen to the program. Now, is this a program with announcers making hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars a year? No. Is it a place where people who played football in the CFL talk? No. Is it a place where, you know, very intelligent football people come to show up other than me? Yes. What it does do that other shows don't, gives you an opportunity to talk about the CFL. And I'll share a piece of information with you at this point. And this is the irony of the whole thing. This program is far more popular before June and after November. Why is that? Well, let me tell you why. Simply because once the season's over, the CFL stops existing in the television and radio world. Is that a slam on TSN? Absolutely not. How can I slam the only network that pays a lot of attention to the CFL, that makes work for former CFL greats and CFL coaches. You see them every week talking about the game we love. So I'm just making a point. And I trudge through the season, you know, just because, you know, what the heck, you know, I'm a CFL fan and I want to talk CFL. So, you know, might as well do it when everybody else is talking about it too. But it truly is, the show is far more popular in the off season. And like I said, it's because more people get involved with this program because nobody else is talking CFL. So what does that say about me and my show? Not very much, apparently. Does it matter to me? Absolutely not. What's important to me is that we talk about CFL football, and some of you want to hear about it, and every so often, some of you want to talk about it. So the opportunity is here 12 months of the year, every day, well, every week of the year. For a long time now, we've been doing it three shows a week. We stopped doing three shows on the CFL. We started doing two, only because just for something different to talk about. And on Fridays now, we talk about hockey. Does that mean that somehow I care less about football? No, not at all. Care as much about football as I've ever cared about it, and probably care about it even more. But the point is, we're here to stay temporarily for a little while, at least now. So I wouldn't worry too much about anything other than calling in and talking about the game you love. This week, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Week. Actually, it's been 2 weeks. 2 weeks when the CFL turns pink, and even Facebook turns pink. And so did my horn turn pink. And I love the question my wife asked. The first question she asked me when she saw me decorated in pink, she goes, does it come off? Because she knows it's only there temporarily for a couple of weeks. Well, we're going to find out. We don't know yet. I'll let you know next week. So, yeah, that's personally what's going on in my life. And the motivation to do this program is quite simply and quite frankly, it's kind of like therapy for me. It gives me an opportunity to engage myself with other people who enjoy what I enjoy. I wouldn't know a Phyllis Jesperson if it wasn't for this program. Why this program? Because it began my full throttle support of the game of football. I began to learn about it from not only watching it on television, but being at games, thanks to John Granger and, of course, the Argo Lifers. It gave me an opportunity to get to know the players personally. So that I understand the game better, and I'm able to, interrelate with those of you that love the game. I've had an opportunity to meet players who give of themselves freely with enthusiasm and sincerity, and that's awful good. So when I say this is for therapy for me, you got to trust me when I say this. I had a bit of a tough time for a short period. People think it's a joke. People think it's funny. Had problems that were brought on by people who are, let's just say, willing to admit that they will lie and they will do what they need to do to hurt me. So I've had a hard, tough road to get by that. For those of you, I talk about this now, Breast Cancer Awareness Week, because sometimes we forget that breast cancer isn't just an issue for women. It also is for men. Maybe not as it's not as prolific when it comes to affecting men, but it does. It's just like I learned when I went to get my the Scholdeis Clinic, because I had this issue called a hernia. Now, some people joke and say, why do they call a hernia a hernia? They should call it a hymnia or something. I didn't realize that women suffered from hernias as well, mostly higher hernias and more dangerous hernias. They suffer from it as well. So the CFL is all about community. Why is it about community? Because it cannot survive, because it basically is like a plant in the desert. You know, it doesn't need much water. It doesn't need much fuel. And it exists, and it can't be destroyed. And it can live on so little. Well, the CFL is like that, too. Now, that doesn't mean that those of us that love the game don't love it, deeply. And would never want to know what it's like to live without the CFL. Well, that's what I've learned doing this program since last January. And as I said, the popularity of the program gets higher when the availability to information about the CFL lessens in the off season. And I'm grateful to be here to do that. Even if there's only one of you out there listening, I'll still do the show. And that's what I'm trying to tell you, is that this program is as much about being for me as it is for being for you. Now, it's very difficult. Blog Talk Radio doesn't have a reputation of getting many people calling in, because the phones don't go through your community. They go through Los Angeles. My network is in L.A., so it's difficult for some people to make that long-distance phone call. Now, don't be shy about messaging me in Facebook. And if you know somebody that wants to, Candid Frank Live, Stanishi is my last name, you can message me and I will call you. It is what it is. This is an opportunity for you to tell me what you think of the playoffs coming up. It's an opportunity for you to tell me what you think, and it's important to realize this, what you think as a Red Blacks fan, what your season's going to be like next year. There are some already telling me, and I don't know if I've said this, I guess in a way I have, only because I've said that I think this is going to be the best expansion for any expansion team, probably in any sport, where a league is literally giving the new team every opportunity to at least begin at the middle of the pack. And that's a sign of unselfishness in the league that realizes that the better the Ottawa Red Blacks are off the get-go, the better the league is. But here's the good news as well. It really is not that relevant, because in my opinion, in the CFL, you could be the worst team in the league at the beginning of the season, and you could turn it right around. So at the beginning of this year, the Toronto Argonauts were, in the East, the favorite by virtue of winning the Grey Cup the previous year. As things worked out, we saw what happened to Montreal. We saw how devastated they were while their number one quarterback was still playing. Anthony Calvillo was and is a Hall of Fame player. Now, he didn't play like a Hall of Fame player, and it didn't look at any point during the season, in those first, I guess, what, six games that he played, it didn't look like he liked the way the team was playing or the set of plays that he was asked to, you know, act on. So things didn't look good for Montreal. Montreal looked like they were ready for the, you know, he was gone. Physically, he couldn't play. I guess it'd be fair to say also, I guess, mentally, he wasn't, you know, capable of playing. Well, it sounded as though 3-4 weeks ago that he may, Anthony Calvillo, may come back the 18th game. We're at the 17th this week. And then last week, we saw a brand new quarterback do the signal calling for the Montreal Alouettes. His name, Troy Smith. His pedigree, Heisman Trophy. His ability, outstanding. This kid can throw the ball literally on a clothesline. This kid has a clean spiral. I mean, I haven't seen too many quarterbacks that have that clean a throw. And for a receiver, no wobble on it, one hand, and it just stays. It's like it sticks to your hand. And I'm not making a stick'em joke. I'm an Argo fan. I'm concerned. This guy's a really good quarterback. Now, where's Montreal sitting? They started at the beginning of the year. It's almost as though the standings have turned upside down. And you know what, folks? Until last week, literally, they pretty much had turned upside down. Even the Winnipeg Blue Bombers had a better couple of weeks than the Argos did. So, Montreal right now, Hamilton, Toronto in the East, I believe they're in a dead heat. I think now what we're going to see is these last two games are going to be where these teams develop themselves, prepare themselves to be ready for the playoffs. We don't know yet who's playing who or where. We only know that the Toronto Argonauts are guaranteed a home game, which means they've guaranteed, at the very least, home in the Eastern semifinal against Montreal or against the winner of Montreal and Hamilton. Having said that, Argo fans aren't that cocky. I think most of us know we're in deep here. Our team's going to need our support. And that support has to start tomorrow at the game at the Rogers Centre when the Argos are being visited by the Blue Bombers. Well, let's hope when they leave that the Blue Bombers. But having said that, selfishly, I've mentioned the Argonauts. Now I must be a good CFL guy and talk about the other two teams in the East that are in the playoffs. Hamilton got spanked last week, and I wasn't surprised. Was I hopeful that he gets spanked? Nope. Did I expect that they were going to get spanked? Yep, I sure did. I referred to them on Facebook as the Fatheads, and I didn't mean that as an insult, just meant it as an observation as to what happens when a team beats their nemesis 2 weeks in a row. They've developed this air of invincibility. Well, a young quarterback named Troy Smith and a defense of the Montreal Alouettes poked a big hole in those Ticats. They did like that balloon that was... Now, you know what? They deserved it. The Fatheads were taught a lesson. Now, having said that, now they go back into Montreal. At stake, first place. At stake, home field advantage if things don't work out well. Like, we're talking feast or famine here. If Hamilton does not beat Montreal, Montreal holds the same advantage that Hamilton is holding at this very point against Toronto if they finish tied. That's right. Montreal will own the same tiebreaker that Hamilton has against Toronto. Should Hamilton lose, that tiebreaker, out the window, see ya, wave at it, it's going down, there it goes, it's gone, bye-bye. So the East, to me, is the beast when it comes to the very closeness of well, the three playoff teams, it really is a pick 'em, guys. Now, talking about Montreal, je ne sais quoi. That's all they could say for the past few weeks. Are they going to make the playoffs? Je ne sais quoi. And I don't think they knew if they were going to win the playoffs. It was impossible for them to even fathom a small little thought. Yes, yes, yes. Each of their quarterbacks, how many do they have here this year? 17, 18? No, I'm just kidding. Four. One's hurt. Concussion. Might be back. Nope. Now gone for the year. And they bring this kid in. And I'm telling you, Montreal has to be feared. And anyone who doesn't understand that is going into this with eyes closed. So the Montreal fans spent a very large part of this year thinking, oh my God, you know, some would even, the pessimists and the people who are jaded might even suggest, when the Montreal team announced, management announced that we would not be using the Olympic Stadium for the playoffs, some of us thought it was because they knew they weren't going to make the playoffs. Now, I wonder how many of them right now in that management office in Montreal going, maybe we should have done that. We should have maybe held off and waited a moment. But we did not. So now we made mistakes side by each. Well, you know, it's okay if you're a Montreal fan, though. It's okay. I'm allowing Montreal fans to listen to this program. In fact, I won't hang up on more than 2 out of 3 Montreal fans. I'm just kidding. I won't hang up on any. So, yeah, so the East, very, 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 very interesting. You guys, we're in for a real treat. We really are. And I love competition. And for me, sport is all about not knowing your team's going to win, but believing they have a chance. And this team, whether you're behind, okay, Winnipeg's next year. Winnipeg can play the spoiler. But, you know, there's got to be a team that doesn't make the playoffs, and that's just the way it is. The point here is, and I don't mean to offend Winnipeg fans. Love you. I love your stadium. You guys are awesome. And most of my friends on Facebook are from Winnipeg. So do I feel bad about Winnipeg? Yeah, I truly do. They're messed up. Like, you know, they've been messed up now for a couple of years. You know, the funny thing is, if they're not messed up, they make it to the Grey Cup. That's Winnipeg for you. You know, if they're not messed up, they make it to the Grey Cup. Do I have any sympathy for Winnipeg? Well, the city, yes. The fans, yes. The team, not so much. They have made their bed. They have done what they've done. And they don't deserve any better a fate than they've created. And they did create this fate. Now, can they undo the damage they've done to themselves? Well, the good news in the CFL is a couple of good moves, a good quarterback, and you could really right the ship. And that's, you know, Argo reference. How do you like that one? So, yeah. So, you know, and isn't a plane known as a ship, too? I mean, they refer to some planes as ships, too, right? So they can right their ship. You know, instead of bombing, they can be successful. Instead of being bombed, they can bomb. And, well, I guess that's a double entendre, right? What I just said there. Well, they're coming into the Rogers Center. And for you Argo fans that are getting all billowed by my conversation about the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, all we need to do is look back to last year around this time. It was the game before the Argos played Saskatchewan. It made the game in Saskatchewan by the Argos that much more important. It really did. What happened? Well, we got our asses kicked. It was not pleasant. And is it possible that it could happen again at the Rogers Centre tomorrow? Yes. That's why we need to be ready there with voices raised. Section 134B, a willing participant in the community that is the Rogers Centre at a CFL game with the Toronto Argonauts. We shall support our team, I hope, loudly and proudly. And let's hope that the Argos come in good. Oh, you're listening to me through Skype, Facebook. Skype, Facebook. That's cool, man. Manasseh, you're going to have to. I cannot say his last name. I feel really bad. Are you waiting to get on? I'm not. You know what? I don't have. Oh, there we go. There you are. I see you. So. You know, Manasseh, I'm just going to finish with the West, and then I'll let you jump in with your opinion. How's that?
Yeah, sounds good.
I can hear you texting me back on Facebook.
Yeah, I was actually messaging right back. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, now I've discussed what I've discussed to you folks out there while Manasseh has joined us, Mike from Minnesota, otherwise known as AKA. So really, it's the Eastern Division is nothing like it was in the middle of the season, even the first third of the season. It's totally, man, it's like an experiment gone crazy. But I got to tell you something. It yielded something really good, and that is some great competition in the East. In the West, a lot similar, but in less of a all the teams arriving at a point, except for the team that's not in the playoffs, arriving on the scene with the real opportunity to win. Right now, I don't think that's true about BC. I think BC, more than any of the other five teams in the playoffs, they don't look as strong so far. Now, they got two more games to right their little ship and get things squared away. Otherwise, one would have to say that BC's in deep trouble no matter who they play, whether it be Calgary or our friends in Saskatchewan. It's going to be difficult for them to be successful. So whoever wins and has first place will have BC, I think, a team that is more than in trouble. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that it'll be easier to beat BC than it will to beat any team in the East that makes it in that semifinal. And that's the part I find hard to believe. When you consider this year, they were three beasts in the West, and the East had an Argo team that was... And remember, subtract that four-game winning streak by the Argos, and they weren't that impressive. They were not that impressive, but you can't take away the victories that they had. So we have to consider those four games. So now we have three teams in the East that are fighting. They're tooth and nail. I think they're all equal at this point. And then you have in the West where BC has been marginalized by the improvement of Saskatchewan the past few weeks and Calgary's consistency this year in proving that it doesn't matter who gets hurt, how many of them get hurt, including John Cornish. And without, I don't have to remind you, all the quarterbacks took turns not being able to play. So, Kevin Glenn's done an awesome job in Calgary. And it's been beautiful. It's been totally beautiful to watch the way that team has had success, with a lot of adversity laid at its front door and probably even down the stairs to the driveway and probably on the road as well. And so, they lost to the Argos at home. I think that might be the only game they lost at home, right, in a while. But anyway, they did that. And so in the West, I think they're the first team that we can scratch off the Grey Cup post. I think if we're to list them in favorites, BC would be number six. Now, who would be my number five? This is where the problem begins. My number five, I'm gonna go 5-4-3, okay? And what I'm gonna say is, any of the Eastern teams, and that be Toronto, Montreal, or Hamilton, could be in those seeds 3, 4, 5 to go. Leaving 2 and 1, Calgary is the favorite, Saskatchewan as the second favorite. So what I'm saying, I guess, is unless Saskatchewan, after beating BC, upsets Calgary, they won't be in the Grey Cup. They have to beat Calgary. I'm saying they won't at this point. Now, this is with the two games left, changes could happen in the next two games, in week 17 and 18. Toronto, Montreal, and Hamilton will be a dogfight. Do I know which one of them are going to go to the Grey Cup? I'm telling you at this moment, at this very second, and with total honesty, as a football fan, not as an Argo fan, not as a Montreal detractor, not as a Hamilton second favorite team in the league, I am saying, just as a football fan, either one of those three teams could end up in Regina for the Grey Cup. But here's the part that I'm going to like telling you, which I find totally fun to say. Whichever of those teams, those three teams, at this point today, I'm telling you, will win the Grey Cup. Whether it's Toronto, Montreal, or Hamilton, they will go in and win the Grey Cup. And they will beat, are you ready for this? Saskatchewan at home. So that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying 2 weeks before the playoffs start. Hook or be crook, that's what I'm saying, and that's what I believe, and that's what I'm going with today. And you can remind me about it tomorrow. So there you go. It's very interesting for me. It's a very interesting definition of what I think the playoffs will come out with. So now we'll go over to Mike, and I'll give Mike a chance. Well, Mike, what do you think of what I just said?
Yeah, actually, I really agree with your take there. It's the East is particularly, it's really wide open. I think you're right. Any of the three teams could make it.
Now, what about Saskatchewan? I figure Saskatchewan's going to surprise Calgary, finally beat Calgary in the right game, and that'll be the final of the West.
Yeah, with the, especially, you know, with this whole situation, it's kind of similar to, like, Hamilton-Toronto, where if Hamilton were to get to the East Final, we know that there's going to be a large number of Ticat fans in the crowd. But they, in Calgary, we're looking at, like, 10, maybe 15,000 Rider fans, you know? There's a good percentage of Calgary season ticket holders that are actually Rider fans that, for the, you know, for all the games, they root for the stands, but when the Riders come to town, they put on green. So it's almost a home field advantage for the Riders, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the main reason why I think that the team in the East will win whichever one survives is because whoever does survive will know that they're lucky to be in the Grey Cup. There won't be any pressure on them, you know. They won't have time for it to go to their head. Whereas Saskatchewan, unfortunately. If Saskatchewan, the way for Saskatchewan to win the Grey Cup this year is to finish first, in my opinion. If they don't finish first, it'll be difficult for them to win the Cup, because then they're going to have to go over the emotional mountain that will be Calgary in the final of the West. That's why I think that it'll be difficult for Saskatchewan.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, the thing I remember is in 2010, they had almost an identical situation as now, where Calgary was first. The Riders were second, and BC was third. And if you remember, that was the year the game went to double overtime, and Durant hit Jason Clairmont for the game-winning touchdown. And then the Riders went on the road to McMahon and pulled off a win and made it to the Grey Cup. So we have the precedent there, and we have the same quarterback. And honestly, I think they have a better team now with a better defense. And honestly, I'll go as far as say a better offense, because if you think about it, the running back was Wes Cates, and he wasn't, you know, nothing against Gay, wasn't the best running back. I mean, compared to Sheets, I think it's a significant upgrade. So if they could do it in 2010, you know, with that team, I think they're capable of doing it again this year.
All right. We're going to take a short break, and after we take this break, we'll talk about the specifics, how Mike or Manasseh disagrees with me that I think it sounds quite clearly that you believe that Saskatchewan can win the Grey Cup.
I think they can get there. I'm just worried. If it's the Argos are there, I think the Argos can win it.
Well, unfortunately, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. If the Argos go to the Grey Cup, they don't waste their time. They just win it. They don't bother with the losing part. That's just a waste of time. I'll be back after this.
Travis. Travis Lule. He's awesome.
Yeah, I love this guy.
He's real.
You know you like him.
Loves the outdoors.
He's out there, all out, every game.
You gotta like that.
Look at him.
Always looking to land the big catch.
He's accurate.
He's articulate.
He's a winner.
Champion.
He's got a great cup.
He's the real deal.
Yeah, you gotta love this guy.
CFL on TSN. You need to see these guys play.
Don't forget, Mike Richards in the morning. TSN 1050. Hey, Argo lifers, Argo fans, the Toronto Argonauts fan cruise is on the horizon. 7-night Eastern Caribbean cruise, February 1st through 8th. Argo fans, do you want to live it up? The ultimate cruise party on the high seas may be just what you need. Join reigning CFL Coach of the Year Scott Milanovic, the Grey Cup winning quarterback Ricky Ray, and members of the 2013 Argos cheerleaders on a 7-night voyage to some of the most exotic destinations in the Caribbean. Join the fun as we kick off the Argos Fan Cruise Week in Miami, Florida, with an action-packed tailgate party, including your newest friends. The party continues on board the Celebrity Reflection with exclusive events throughout the week that will have everyone talking. There is no better way than to spend the week by soaking up the sun, enjoying fine cuisine, hitting up the gym or spa, or simply partying the night away. Get ready to put your game face on and join the fun. For more information on pricing or to book, please call 416-929-1980, 416-929-1980, or toll free 1-877-510-2751. That's 1-877-510-2751. Book early, because this is one huddle you can be a part of with the Toronto Argonauts.
One, two, three.
We're the Argos Cheerleaders.
And you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show. One more time. One, two, three.
We're the Argos Cheerleaders.
And you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show. Yay! Woo. Go Frank! Go Frank!
Go Frank!
Go Frank! There you go, Frank.
Thank you. I need to go. After hearing that, I need to go. All right, so as promised before the break, I wanted to hear, it sounded to me like you were suggesting that Saskatchewan could make it to the Grey Cup, and you obviously said they wouldn't win. What makes you think why they can't beat Toronto in the, I know why I think so, but why do you think they can't beat the Argos in the Grey Cup?
I think it's probably agree on the same point. It's just the Argos have proven to be a team that can perform, you know, in hostile situations in front of big crowds like they did last year in Montreal. And, you know, they won in Saskatchewan earlier this year. And they just, whether it's Ricky Ray or Zach Caleros or, you know, across the board, they just have guys that seem to step up when, you know, it seems like the most difficult situation. So if it's Montreal or Hamilton, I'm confident the Riders could win. But if it's the Argos, I'm definitely thinking it's going to be back-to-back titles.
Can you help me with a technical issue I have right now?
Yep.
Tell me if you can hear this. I'm just curious.
Okay. I can't hear anything.
Okay. That answers my question. I can close that up. No, I have some interviews, and I lost them and then found them from yesterday. Couldn't find them, and then I just found them as I was getting ready for the show. All right, so I can't play them, so you have to basically upload them to the LA studio. Oh well, that's life. Okay, so the fact that Saskatchewan is the home for the Grey Cup this year, it's going to be a lot of fun for the people in Saskatchewan. It'll be a lot more fun if their team's in it. Do you think maybe another reason might be that the pressure may be too much expecting to win? Even realizing the last two Grey Cups were won by the home team.
For the Riders, I don't think so, just because of Corey Sheets. I think for whatever reason, just whenever he makes a big play, it just seems to inspire the team and pushes them over the top. And that's something they didn't really have the last couple of years, having a guy who could be there to take the pressure off Durant. And, you know, the defense, at the end of the day, when your defense can play at a high level like they can, that usually, you know, the defenses always play well in front of big crowds and under pressure. So, yeah, I'm confident in that.
Okay, let's talk specifically about some of the teams and where they're at. I hate to use a tweet term, a Twitter term, but the teams that are trending. And this week, I think if one were to Twittify the CFL, I think it's fair to say that Montreal is trending right now, don't you think?
Yeah.
Troy Smith, yeah. We're given the Players of the Week awards this week, and they were well deserved, weren't they?
Yeah, definitely. Do you think Chip Cox is going to be the Defensive Player of the Year?
Well, you know, he has amazingly, through everything that Montreal's been through, he has been one consistent great spot for Montreal. I'm trying to remember now. I haven't seen every game they played, but I might have seen at least 16. And the 16 that I saw, he was a factor in every game. Unfortunately, yeah, you can't carry a team on your own, especially from that position. It's not like, you know, it's not like Troy, the quarterback, right? He is, you know, his position, he can win a game for you, but you got to make it possible for him to be an impact on the game. And this is what makes Montreal so great and what makes the CFL so great. A small little change here and there, and all of a sudden that player, he could be the Defensive Player of the Year on a winning team. Can he be a Defensive Player of the Year on a team that doesn't do well? I think the voting ends just before the Grey Cup, right? I think the CFL, just like every other league, before the playoffs they decide, right? I'm not sure about that. So you know, what happens now in the last two games of the year will determine whether, you know, if they finish real well, it's going to raise his profile that much more, don't you think? And it'll be almost impossible not to call him the Defensive Player of the Year, because who else has played better?
Yep. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he's also on pace to break the tackle record.
Yes, yes, yes. And this year, you know, it was really this year started weird with the sacks. Winnipeg was just crazy with sacks at the beginning of the year. Crazy with sacks. You know, the way the sacks started this year, I don't think we should be surprised that a lot of the quarterbacks, the first stringers, got hurt because, you know, it seemed to me no front line could protect their quarterback at the beginning of this year. It was amazing. And to prove the point, it really didn't impact on the win-loss side of things because it almost seemed like, you know, Montreal was losing, Winnipeg was losing, and they were at the lead. They were leading in sacks, you know? It seemed kind of weird. It really did start weird that way. Chip Cox is a great player. He's not a very vocal guy, you know. He's not the kind of guy that makes a lot of – I mean, he does, you know, proudly remind people what he just did, but he doesn't do it as – he doesn't do the Superman or the you know, the gun show, you know. He just sort of – he's really happy with what he did. I like that. I'm not a big fan of the guys who do, you know, who get a little – you know, jump around like, you know, oh, look what I did, you know, a little too much, you know, let's keep playing, you know. He's very humble. I'm not going to say he's humble. He's scary, and he's not that big.
Yeah, don't they always say you got to watch out for the quiet ones?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you don't hear him coming, do you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I think to answer your question, absolutely. He's more than, he may not be a shoo-in, but, you know, he's got a sock on at least.
Okay.
Right? So, he may not be a shoo-in, but he's got a sock on.
Yeah. So then from your perspective, then we're just assuming the Argos are going to get the number one seed. Who would you be more worried about facing, Montreal or Hamilton?
I got to tell you the truth. They both scare me. They both scare me equally for different reasons.
Oh. Okay.
Hamilton because... I think Hamilton has a better team than Montreal. Okay, wow. I truly believe that Hamilton has a better team than Montreal. I just think that, you know, they hate Toronto that much more, which makes things equal. Mm-hmm. You know, against Toronto, they have a better team, built on that hatred of Toronto and that rivalry. You know, that desire to beat Toronto so bad. Montreal is just going to do it. If they beat Toronto, it's going to be surely on talent and, you know, defensive skill and a head coach that outsmarts our head coach. You know, Pop, this year and this this season when things started, you know, Montreal is coming from a long way back, and I think that's going to be hard for the Argos to stop, that kind of new surging confidence. That's why I worry about Montreal. Hamilton? Just based on hate of the Argos.
So does Montreal have like a large following? Like do their fans travel well?
Oh yeah, they travel. They travel. Well, they can't travel as well as Hamilton to Toronto. You know, after all, you walk to Toronto if you live in Hamilton. From Montreal, not so much. You know, and there are a lot of Hamilton fans here in Toronto. Just as there are a few Argo fans in Hamilton. But in Montreal, I don't know that there's that many Argo fans in Montreal. That many Montreal fans here in Toronto. So we've had this discussion when it comes to Saskatchewan, right? You know, I think you either know or you're well aware of the fact that a lot of the Saskatchewan fans that come to Argo games are actually living here in Toronto.
Right, yeah.
Right? So the travel part? Not as much as Hamilton, and definitely not as much as Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan, they pretty much, you know, their team emblem should be a suitcase.
that's funny, yeah.
You know, little Saskatchewan. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, to answer your question, no, they don't travel well.
Okay. So, no, I was just wondering because apparently the Argos need about 31,000 and change to have an official sellout, so... I think we both could agree if Hamilton shows up, it's probably a guaranteed sellout. And if Montreal, it'll be close if not there, right?
Yeah. But, you know, I've said this to you all year, and John has said it to you as well. The toughest part about being an Argo fan this year is that you're going out to watch games on weird days. You know, and the playoff game, thank goodness, and thank goodness that the World Series is being played and the playoffs are being played in baseball, because that means we don't have to worry about conflicting dates with the Blue Jays.
Right.
So that means we can get decent dates for games, right? So that's gonna that's gonna perk up the audience to begin with, the live, you know, the live audience. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so 31, will they break the 31? Will they have a sellout? I think it's quite likely, actually.
Yeah.
I think it's more than likely. Yeah, I think they'll have it. I think they'll have a sellout. And, you know, after all, the last few games they've played on decent nights against decent teams and had decent crowds. The worst crowds have been on Tuesday nights, which I don't find hard to believe.
You can understand, yeah. So
yeah,
have you, are you planning on attending the playoff game?
Yeah, I already, they automatically take the money out of my account.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's
great,
the deal.
Great.
That's the deal I have with the Argos. You make the playoffs, I'll buy a ticket.
Oh, okay. Fantastic. Then.
It's sort of a deal that we have going. It's an understanding.
Right. So you're going to be sitting in the same seats, the same section?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Of course.
That's great.
Of course I will.
Yeah.
John, it'd kill me if I wasn't there. Speak of the devil.
What's up, boys?
I said, speak
John,
the devil.
What's up, man?
What,
John,
devil?
Johnny? Did you hear what he said? He asked me if I was to the playoff. Mike asked me if I was going to the playoff game.
Oh, well, that's a silly question, Mike.
And then he asked me. And then he asked me if I was sitting in the same section, same seat.
Oh. What? What? Are you so disconnected, Mike, that you wondered those questions?
Well, I just had to know if, like, Frank had other stuff going on or what's, I don't know how the whole ticket thing worked, if season ticket holders get the same seats or whatnot.
Oh, yeah, we get
oh,
first.
Oh, I see.
We get first dibs.
Okay.
Yeah, but if Frank had a deadline date and if he didn't renew his playoff ticket by that deadline date, then it goes out to public sale.
Okay.
Yeah, and they already have. I said to him, the Argos already have access to money. If they make the playoffs, all I have to do is on the phone say, I'll buy a ticket. Yeah. That's all. It's real simple.
And speaking of the playoffs, they will be playing the Eastern Final in Toronto. They're going to clinch tomorrow by double digits.
Nice.
It's going to be a stinker tomorrow. It's going to be.
Oh,
For Winnipeg, it'll be a stinker. Winnipeg, the only away place that Winnipeg plays well is usually in Montreal, okay? And they've done their thing, and the other place that they play well is at home. And they couldn't play well enough to beat them at home. Second half, yeah, I got to give them credit. They came back, and I don't get how the Argos went flat like that in the second half. I mean, Jesus Christ. They were favored by 6.5.
What?
And they missed. And they miss it by half a point. I don't get it. Anyway, it's going to be double digits this time, guys. I have no fear whatsoever. And we are definitely going to be partying at Shoeless Joe's afterwards, Frank. No doubt.
Wow.
Yeah, the partying part aside, and I say that because I don't want to use up all my partying because it's going to be a long road of partying, you know. The last game of the year will be against Montreal. It's going to be one heck of a game. The third stringers will be out there, and if history repeats itself, they'll beat the crap out of Montreal. Montreal will go home with their tails between their legs.
No, Frank. No, I don't think it's going to happen that way. I'm going to tell you something. Montreal. I know we always disagree, but Montreal is going to. If they come out of with a win against Hamilton, which I, as a Ticats fan, if I was them. Coming up with nothing against their defense, Montreal's defense. Never mind that Montreal could put up the points, too, but the defense showed up. So if that same defense shows up, which they do every game, and if the offense, which you can tell, can put some points up now, I mean, this is a playoff game right now going into Guelph. And if that's the case, that last game against Toronto is going to mean a lot for Ticat fans. They're going to be cheering the Argo fans on. But, guys, just like as if I was a Ticat fan, if it was reversed, and Toronto had nothing to play for that last game against Montreal, sit every freaking starter you can possibly think of that needs some rest, put them aside, let all the practice guys get their last dibs in, and let it be. Too bad, Ticat fans, if you can't beat them at home at Guelph, then you didn't deserve to be there in the Eastern Final in the first place. So it's going to be.
The Argos did Hamilton a favor last year. You know, they put out their third stringers, and they said to Hamilton, come on, we'll help you make the playoffs. You know, we'll put our third stringers out there. And what happened? Hamilton got their asses kicked. I still don't believe that game. I shake my head even today thinking about that game that Hamilton lost last year. The chips were on the table, and they did like pussies do. They purred, and then they meowed.
Oh.
And then they hid under the rocking chair and cowered.
Oh, Frank!
No, it was different.
It was a different team last
I know,
year. This year's team is much better.
But what I'm saying is, they only get pumped up for Toronto. What I'm saying is that Montreal is the better team at this point when it comes to playing against Hamilton, because Hamilton right now, the edge that they have is just the fact, like, if Toronto just puts their third stringers out there, they're going to be doing the same thing for Montreal that they did for Hamilton last year. And I don't think it's anything bad to say about Toronto in regards to they're not trying to do anybody any favors. The only team they're trying to do favors for is their team. You know, if Coach Milanovic feels that his players need to be rested because they've had an injury-filled, emotionally draining season, you know, then that's what he's going to do. But I suspect this year will be a little different than last year, where he has a lot of guys who've rested more than they need to and will need a little playing time, like Kackert, Owens, Ray.
Right.
You know, it's a whole different set of circumstances this time around. This time around, he's got too many players who've had too much rest. So we could see a real good team play. And you know, once he starts putting guys like that in the game, he's going to have to put a good supporting cast in, because he doesn't want to turn Ricky Ray or Chad Kackert or Chad Owens into targets, right? So he's going to have to put his guys
up.
So this year might be a little different, even if they've got it wound up. So we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I love about the CFL. Who really knows what's going to happen? I don't. I feel so free to talk, because I really know that it doesn't matter what I say, I'll probably be wrong, because it's not about knowing what you're talking about. It's the CFL. It's one big surprise after the other. And it's great.
So do you guys think it's a good idea that Kacker's going to start tomorrow?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
100%.
You're not worried about him re-injuring himself before the playoffs?
Well, what's the point if he re-injures himself now or in the playoffs?
If he takes this week off,
he would get 3 weeks off until the East Final, right, wouldn't he?
No, they got to get Chad back in there. And, look, the kid wants to play, and he's not stupid either. He also wants to heal his wounds if they need to be healed, because there's the guys who have stepped in on that road trip for him when he was injured and so forth stepped in just fine, and it did the trick. The last two games, not so much. Okay, and that's probably because just the way, you know, having Ray back, they kind of put different playlists out there, I imagine. And with Chad being back there, there's more options. And his shoulder, for running back, you got to be all there, because you're going to be taking a lot of hits on your shoulder, on your knee. I think his knee is 100%. I don't think that's a doubt. On the shoulder part, I don't know too much about it, but, you know, the guy would not be going back in if he can't go and take a licking, okay? He's tough, and he likes to make a hit just as much as somebody wants to make a hit on him. So I have no fear that if Chad says he can go tomorrow, and if Danny Webb and the training staff, these guys are experienced, they don't put guys in there for just the sake of it, let's put him in there. He's ready to go. And it's
I don't think his concern is with taking a licking, because he's done with the tie cats. He's more concerned with a pecking. Because now we're playing Montreal.
Frank's here all night.
I'm here all night. Yes. Is this thing working? No, seriously. And either way, I think, John, we agree that he needs playing time. He's had a lot of time. You know, his body has had a plenty of time to be energized, right? And then he's got to get that. In my opinion, you know, I believe athletes when they come back. They come back real good in the first little while, even in the first part of a game. But until they get into game shape, they're not in game shape. Game shape is more than playing one game. Game shape requires at least a couple of games where they can get out all the rust, right? And I think as an Argo fan, I think it would be far better served if this year, I think the Argo fans are going to be able to see the team playing with their better players in the last two games. There's a bigger chance of that because there's been a lot of rest time for the key players. I mean,
right.
It's just, I'm repeating myself, but I really believe that. I think we need to see those guys out in the field. We need them shaking off some rust. And it's Montreal, as good as Montreal is and as good as Hamilton are, if Toronto's big guns are gunning, we're going to win. It's that simple. Wow. If the guys are paid the big bucks play the way they can, they're not going to beat the Argos. I don't think so.
So John, we didn't get your take on Monday of what's your opinion of Troy Smith in Montreal now?
Wow. I mean, you know, he's good. I mean, he stepped right in. Look, anytime you see a guy coming in for his first time and gets a win and a pretty win. It wasn't like an ugly win. It wasn't a shaky win. He got a really nice win out of it. He's going to have to prove himself. I love it when quarterbacks in this league succeed. And it used to be a long history of them always being a failure, that the CFL didn't have a quarterback. It had maybe, you know, two or three guys that were quality guys, but the rest were kind of in and out the door kind of quarterbacks. Now you can't say that anymore. And I know we've been saying this all year long, guys, but gosh darn it, I don't remember ever, like Frank said, having this is a year of the quarterback in the CFL. And I mean, the guy, let's see how he backs it up. Like I said, Montreal has something to fear. I mean, we'll see how this falls out. But if that defense against Montreal shows up, that same one, I mean, look, I don't know how Burris is going to do it. These guys, they're hungry. And I'd be worried about them, too. Either regardless of who we get, let's put it this way, Frank, if the Ticats are in the Eastern Final with us, it's scary because these guys get pumped up against the Argos.
Yeah, they hate us.
They hate us, and they get jacked. But I don't now with everybody playing on the Argos, because they had us with every single game so far this year. And I know their Ticat fans are going to say, "Well, we have injury lists too." Nah, not to the key players. You know, besides Fantuz, who was out for a while at the beginning. Since then, they've had their core there. Okay, Gable has been doing great. These guys have been all there doing their stuff. But Toronto and Guelph had five new defensive guys in the lineup with two regulars who got suspended the night before. And even with that, the Argos were still able to take it down to the last play. You know, and this was Ray's first game back. You can tell he looked rusty. But I'm going to go back to that game. That refereeing was unbelievable, that Guelph game. Anyway, here we are right now, Winnipeg, double-digit win. Guelph, I don't know. I hope so. I hope the Ticats, it'd be better for the Sky Dome as far as having fans down. I caught the little bit that you asked, Mike, about do Montreal fans travel. Yes, they do. In the playoffs, they'd like to come to Toronto or wherever they have to go. They have a core group that do go. And follow their team. So is it going to be as many as if it was Hamilton? No, not even close, okay? So for the CFL and for the Rogers Centre and maybe for the gate for the Argos, it would be better to have the Ticats in there. But I would be scary, very scary for the Ticat fans. Alouettes. Oh, boy, guys, not to be able to even score a touchdown against them. It's not about, you know, the Ticats defense or whatever. They're offense, guys. Hello. You know, did you guys hear the TSN little pep talk that Austin gave them before the game? You got to play intense, though. You got to come out there jacked up. You got to be a first ones to do it all. You got
to take the game to them.
What?
Well, yeah.
Huh? Yeah. They can't. So that speech didn't help them at all. And he knew they were going to come out flat because they only get jacked for the Argos.
Try another thing. Here's another question, Mike, since you're a real good statistics guy. Between the two teams now that let's assume that Montreal has their quarterback, injuries-wise, how are those two teams at this point, in your opinion?
Oh, are you talking about the Ticats and the Owls?
Yeah, they're healthy, right?
The Ticats on defense are still pretty banged up. They got a let's see, D. Webb is out. The Brandon Isaac looks like he might be hurt. They got several guys still pretty banged up. Offensive line, they're missing two starters, but their starting right tackle, Brian Simmons, started practicing this week, so they're starting to get a couple back, but they're still missing a lot of key guys.
Okay. So then Montreal is the healthiest of the three teams then?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Well, once you walk beyond, walk mentally beyond Calvillo's retirement, at least for this year, right? That's the one position where they were suffering, and it's a big position to be suffering an injury. It would be quarterback. Now, assuming this kid now that they've brought in, and to add to what John said about this guy being a good quarterback, you don't win the Heisman on a lucky year. You know,
yeah, but
this
I
kid
mean,
won
you know,
the
Heisman
Trophy
winners are kind of overrated, though, usually.
Well, all right, fine. Even the ones, put it this way. Do you know the last time Montreal had a Heisman winner on their team?
Man. Was it Andre Ware? No, he was with the Argos.
Nope.
Yeah, never mind. No.
Johnny Walker. No. Yeah. Was it Johnny Walker? Was his name Johnny Walker? What was his name? John, the punt returner.
John Granger?
No, Walker.
Oh.
Walker. What was his name? Rogers. Johnny Rogers. Holy... Roger, Jesus Christ, it's their corporation. Yeah, he was Rogers was a winner of the Heisman, and he did a great job for Montreal. If they get that same kind of, was it Johnny Rogers? Is that his name?
I think it might have been a starts with a G.
Just all of a sudden, I forgot his name. You don't know either, eh, John?
No, I don't even know.
I'm going back past your era, guys. I'm going to the 70s. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So, he was a running back for Montreal, he was a punt returner, and the kind of receivers you see today. Actually, he's probably the reason why receivers are. I mean, he's been one of he was ahead of his time. And anyway, he won the Heisman Trophy. He didn't make it in the NFL for a very long period. But when he came to the CFL, his quality showed through, and I don't think this kid's going to be any different. Troy Smith is going to prove to be the talent that he is. And the reason why I disagree with the Heisman, your theory on the Heisman, it's not that they're overrated. It's that they think they're that much better. Some of them have it go to their head. And that's what happens sometimes, right? Did it go to Johnny Rogers' head or Troy Smith's head or every other Heisman Trophy player football player that didn't do well? I don't know. But I just know that there's there's a talent to win that trophy. You have to have talent. Whether you have the mentality to keep playing hard, that's another story.
Mike,
No,
I was going to ask. We're talking about the playoffs. Mike, are you coming up to the playoff game for the Eastern Final up here?
I would hope to, but I don't know, man. My work schedule is looking ridiculous.
It's on a weekend.
Yeah,
so
see.
You come here. Yeah, you leave, you're not that far from Minnesota, right? So you leave Sunday morning. You leave Sunday morning. You get here, and I'll have a ticket for you then. I'll buy one for you if you trek it up here, okay?
All right, then you
got to tell
me
soon because I can't hold a ticket. Remember, there's a deadline for them, right? If you get up here, then you can make it home right after the game. Game finishes before 5, and you'll be back in bed by 11 Minnesota time.
There you go.
See how I planned it out for you already?
Yeah.
Or
I'll let you know by next week for sure if I can make it.
Or you could sleep in my trailer in the backyard.
There you go.
Nice.
My wife is laughing because we're going to close the thing up this week. It's a little bit cold out there, a little brisk. You're from Minnesota. You should be able to handle it. You guys are even colder than where we are.
It already started snowing up here.
Yeah, we heard.
It already started snowing? Yeah.
You can keep it. It's yours. You can have it.
That's another thing that Toronto gets a bad rap on, as far as the Americans think that it's like, winter up here, 9 months of the year, and they don't even realize that one quarter of the United States is above Toronto's latitude, longitude, okay? So I just wanted to throw that fact in.
Above
but,
the 49th
yeah,
parallel. The 49th parallel is north of where we
yes.
are.
Yes. Right, right. But, you know, the stereotype is there, but not from people from Minnesota. They have it a little bit rougher than we do. You know?
Oh, God, yes.
For some reason.
Buffalo, you don't have to go far. Buffalo has it worse than we do. We sit here and laugh all the time when Buffalo gets 27 inches of snow and we're sitting here outside in our shirt sleeves laughing at them.
But still, we're the tundra, right?
Yeah, and we're the frozen tundra. Now, actually, Mike, the thing of it is we have what's called the Niagara Escarpment. You know where the Niagara Falls is, right?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So we can grow food year-round in that area.
Wow.
Because it's called the Niagara Escarpment. It's basically the Golden Shield. Is that what it is, Carolyn? Golden Horseshoe.
Isn't it the Golden Horseshoe? Yeah.
Yeah, my wife, she corrected me. Golden Horseshoe. Yeah. So we got all that going on. All right, listen, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, let's spend some time talking about the West. And we'll get your opinion on how that, you know, will look, I guess. Hopefully in the future, right? Okay, the Argos, we mentioned last week that there were a lot of things that Argos do charitably, and one of the things that they're doing is the White Ribbon Campaign, and I had a chance to do an interview, and here it is. I'm with Todd Meinerson, Executive Director of the White Ribbon Campaign. Congratulations on the connection with the Toronto Argonauts. Please explain for my listeners what your program's all about.
Sure, thanks, Frank. We're working with the Argos and through the funding of Status of Women to add some work around gender-based violence and violence against women and girls to the already incredibly successful Huddle Up program that the Toronto Argonauts have run for the past 12 years. And our plan is to be able to talk to young men and boys in schools about healthy relationships with women, gender equality, respect, preventing violence, giving boys the space to ask those questions and to figure those things out so that they set themselves on a path for the future that's going to be violence-free and respectful to all people.
My biggest issue with violence, whether it's against women, men, boys, girls, doesn't matter, is secrecy.
Okay.
That seems to be the biggest hurdle that a person has to overcome before the good things can start to happen or the bad things can stop.
Yeah, I think you're right on. I mean, one of the things, the core elements of our pledge at White Ribbon is to never commit, condone, or remain silent about violence against women. That means speaking up about it. That means speaking up if you've experienced it. That means breaking that stigma around that we don't talk about it, that it doesn't happen. And that's a way that we can get boys to do stuff about it, because when they see it happening, they speak up. It doesn't become acceptable anymore. It doesn't become tolerable. And that's a huge part of the work that's going to happen.
I guess another question is, sometimes people think something's funny because it's happening to someone else. Should we check when we see an interaction between people, whether it be boys and girls, men and women, children and adults, and people see something that isn't right but think it's funny, should people diagnose what if it's really funny for everyone?
Right, right. Humor often is like a coping mechanism for what we do when we don't know how to intervene or be a bystander in a situation. And it's also a way to kind of mask the seriousness by the perpetrator. Oh, we're just joking. It was only just in fun. But when we teach young men and women that, no, it's not fun, it hurts people, it has an impact, and here's some things that you can do to intervene and say it's not funny, it can have a huge impact. Like, I play hockey, I'm in my locker room, I just started this job at White Ribbon. A guy makes an inappropriate joke about rape, about a woman. I'm like, I got to say something, but I'm terrified. And I could feel the redness coming up from my toes, and I didn't want to kick off the team or get ostracized by these guys. I said something eloquent like, hey, that's not very funny. I hid my head. The joke stopped, but the more interesting thing that happened afterwards was three guys after the game approached me in the parking lot and said, I'm glad you said something, because I didn't think it was funny either, but I didn't know what to say.
Now, just as many would say, who the heck do you think you are?
Yeah.
So that's the problem. But the important thing is the three that acknowledged it. It's a building process, isn't it? It's foundational.
And I think more and more we uncover that there are guys that are uncomfortable with that, and when somebody speaks out, tells them that it's okay to do that, shows them that it's a way that's not as threatening, and it sets a new tone, a new norm in that group.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to
me. You got it.
Mr. Meinerson, White Ribbon Campaign, Toronto Argonauts, a great connection, and I'm happy for you. This must be a wonderful day.
Thanks very much. Come back and check with us when we got the program up and running, and we'll tell you how it's going.
Well, there you go. It is one of the things that the Argos do that's very important, and that is work in the community. Okay, so John, would you agree, or both of you, John first, give me the order of the teams as far as being favorites to win the great to get to the Grey Cup. You got BC, you've got Saskatchewan, you've got Calgary. Who do you think is going to show up at the Grey Cup, and why? Mike, you first. John, you first.
Okay, Toronto.
No, forget Toronto. We're talking about the West. Stop. We're talking about the West. Holy mackerel. Talk about being focused. Holy crap.
Okay. Listen.
Yeah, let's
seriously
talk about the West, because John, first of all, would you agree that the West is not as wide open as the East now? Considering
seriously, I think this game here coming up between Calgary and Saskatchewan again is like that same level of playoff intensity that's going to be in Guelph between the Cats and Montreal. It's, you know, we got the Sheets running back rivalry going on, and I think this game here is going to be really – I think Calgary is going to come on top, okay? I'm sorry, Mike, I really do. I think the Riders are going on a nice run now with Sheets there. It just shows – the balance that this guy puts into that team, and for some reason they got everything going in the right direction. Now, mind you, BC is wounded, so we don't know the kind of level of comeback team they are right now until we see what they're going to do this weekend against Calgary. I still feel Calgary has that taste in their mouth from last year, that nasty taste of losing and the way they lost. And the fact that they've had such a successful year with so many injuries from beginning to middle to end. Well, you know, at the end, they're getting their stuff back, right, their players and stuff. So Calgary, I think, is still the dominant one with the hunger. The Riders, you know, the way they start impresses you. The way they end up playing in the middle depresses you. And the way they finish just confuses you. And I'm confused, okay? Now,
so
do
am
they
I
have
now.
That extra – yeah. But they have that extra intensity because the Grey Cup is being played in their backyard. Right? So
right.
By having that extra desire, you know, you got that – I don't think BC is in the picture at all, guys. I just don't think they're going to be able to – you know, I think Calgary and the Riders are the ones to focus on here. Sorry, BC Lion fans, but – I'm just the fan looking at it from my point of view, and
okay,
that's
the John,
way I
now that
see
we've
it right
that,
now.
John, okay, BC's a distant third, right, to make it to the Grey Cup to represent the West. How close are one and two, and who's one and who's two?
I would have to say right now, today, I would have to say Calgary is slightly one. After this weekend, if Calgary wins, I'm going to just go all out Calgary, okay? Just the way I feel. I mean, you know,
And what about first? You figure it's because they're going to finish first that they'll have all the advantages, I guess?
You know, I can't, you know, it's hard to say unless you're a player, unless you're a person on that Calgary team that went through what they went through last year and to go through their struggles this year and still be on top in the West. I think that just in itself gives them that honor of being ranked number one, Frank. And
yeah, okay.
You know, just for those reasons.
So the favorite to make it to the Grey Cup from the West, in your opinion, is Calgary with second, a close second, Saskatchewan, and a distant third, BC. Mike, how do you see it?
No, I kind of agree with what John was saying initially. Like, as far as this weekend playing out, I think he's right. Calgary's going to win, but what we have to remember, guys, is the fact that the Riders, when they show up in McMahon, it's going to be about 15 to 20,000 Rider fans at the game. So that to me, just it adds an element to the game that I think makes it almost like a neutral playing field. So I don't consider it a road game.
I would say 5,000 because Calgary fans show up. They're not going to make those seats available for the Rider fans. Let's put it that way. And I know they're still going through a tough come back with the floods and everything. But I just know, and we see pockets in the top corners of the stadium, you know, where vacant seats and so forth. But if that Western Final turns out to be Calgary and the Riders, which I think it is going to be, and it'll be with the Stampeders having home advantage, obviously we're playing in Calgary, I think they're going to try to be, and they always will show up. I mean, they're going to try to outscalp them and get all the tickets they can and whatever. But don't kid yourself. Stampeder fans are good.
No, what I was actually alluding to when I talked to Frank about this earlier was Rob Peterson was actually telling me how there's a lot of people in Calgary who buy season tickets and they support the Stamps for the majority of the year, but they're actually Rider fans from Saskatchewan. And no, it's the actual fact, because when you'll see it, because when the game comes on, go look at any video of any Rider or Stamps games in Calgary. It's green and red. It's literally 50-50. And it's like, how did all these Rider fans get tickets? And the fact is the majority of them are actually from Saskatchewan initially. So, but
you could have a point there.
It really is. Like you guys talked about with the whole diaspora out of Saskatchewan, the majority of them went to Calgary. And the interesting thing is, if you look at this year for the Riders, it's still similar to 2010. Like, you remember how Jason
Mike. I get that, Mike. But, you know, the teams on the field have to win. I get all this. You know, this is the problem I have with Saskatchewan, you know, with Saskatchewan, is that it seems to me that the fans play harder than the team when it matters. You know, we were here in Toronto, and it was my first Grey Cup in like 20 years. I watched Saskatchewan win, actually, one of the Grey Cups they did win, you know. They've won one, right? I know, yeah, I can prove. I can attest to the fact that Saskatchewan has won a Grey Cup, and because I was there.
In the Sky Dome. It was against the Ticats.
Exactly. I happen to think the problem with Saskatchewan is that, you keep talking about the fans. I'm not sure that the fans matter, because if the fans mattered that much, the Argos wouldn't have won four straight here on the road. So, you know, if Saskatchewan's going to win, Mike, I'm not saying they're not going to win. I'm saying the players are going to have to do it. I don't think the fans are going to have anything to do with it anymore, because I happen to think that every year, all the time, Saskatchewan fans do their part. I love those fans. They're the best fans in the world. But unfortunately, I think they take a lot of the attention away from the team, which is necessary. Because everybody talks about how great the fans are. But you know what? The team craps a lot more than it does good. You know, all you have to do is look at how many Grey Cups they won. Huh? If you list all the active teams in the CFL today, who has the worst record for winning Grey Cups?
Probably Winnipeg.
Nope, you're wrong. It's Saskatchewan.
Well, Winnipeg hasn't won a Grey Cup in like 23 years.
It don't matter. They've won more than Saskatchewan. That's all I'm saying is that, you know, when push comes to shove, it's got to be the team. I'm all for, like, you know, John and I can brag about how we affect the game in the stands and stuff like that, and how great we are because we've caused an offensive play to go south on a team. I like that. You know, I say we could make a difference, but really the team on the field has to make the difference. And Saskatchewan has not shown me yet that they're able to overcome adversity. They're actually in the midst of doing it right now. And I agree with what both you guys said in as far as this week. Saskatchewan winning this week will set the table for them making it to the Grey Cup.
Okay.
And it won't be because of the fans, Mike. F the fans. The fans don't mean diddly squat. When it really comes down to it, the team's got to win. The team's got to do... And I don't disagree with you that Saskatchewan has that big an impact on the field. They'll have a great impact. They've got great players. Now all they have to do is prove it. You don't have to prove it to the fans.
The thing you got
to
point out, Frank, like when you brought up about Toronto coming on the road, it's not necessarily the size of the crowd, and even John can attest to this, even at the Rogers Centre. It's about the intensity and the passion and the electricity that's being generated. When the Argos come to Saskatchewan, the fans aren't that pumped up the same way they are for when Hamilton. Whenever the Eastern teams show up, they're just not that fired up. When BC came last Saturday, I've never heard it that loud, and the defense fed off of it, and they generated 7 turnovers in the first half.
Mike.
Hey,
Mike.
I gotta ask, you got a point, but hold on. Did you listen to the last show when we had a Ticap fan on, Bruce Inch? He asked Pottinger, who was on the show, a question regarding, does it affect you when we hackle you and we harass you throughout the whole game? Does it affect your mental status of how you play and so forth? And, you know, Jason basically said, in a way, it does the reverse. It psychs you up. It pumps you up when you're the visitor. It doesn't affect you in that negative down way. Unless, you know, I'm not going to speak for Jason, unless you're falling behind, it might affect you in some ways. Each player individually takes it differently, right? But as a core group team, when it comes to the playoffs, guys, when it comes to the play, during the season, I think the fans are more effective. Okay, because you need something to keep you going throughout the season. And you need some sort of intensity going. But in the playoffs, I think they zone everything out. I think the home team takes it for its advantage, but the visitors zone us out. Okay, they are totally tuned out. They are trying to focus in too hard. The home team does get an extra kind of advantage because they kind of listen to the exterior of the noise that's going on. When there's a good play and they get cheered on, they pick it up. But the defense, I mean the visitors, they just zone us out, guys. They really, really do. And Frank, with you know, we like to brag that we have some sort of effect, and that's what we thrive on, hoping that
Absolutely.
We do. And in Seattle and so forth, when they caused the time count violation to happen and because of noise effects, in that sense, that's where we become effective as a fan, to make enough noise, not to get the calls in, time count. But as far as rattling these guys and in any way disturbing their mentality from the sporting point of view and the athletic point of view, not a chance. It just washes right off them. They're professionals. This is not high school where you're getting taunted for the first time. This is the pros. They've
well,
gone to college.
There's the other side too, you know? John. There's the other. Yeah, you're right. And to add to that, you know, the other part is that when I talked to Ricky Ray last week, I was talking to him about the crowd and how noisy they are and how, you know, it hinders his cadence and all that stuff. But you should have seen his eyes light up when I said to him, "But do you like making the crowd quiet?" Oh, gee.
Yeah.
That motivates the players. You know, Mike, that motivates the players more than anything. If you want to talk about crowd impact, there's nothing a team enjoys more than shutting the fans up. And I'll remember the game in Saskatchewan. I saw lots of beer where guys were, it seemed to me there was more beer in their glass after the Argos got a touchdown than before, because I think they were filling their cups with tears. They were like, the fans were sitting there, it almost looked like they were crying, the Saskatchewan fans.
Hey,
they were stunned.
Frank.
I mean, you
know, You hit a note on something. As a fella who likes to go to away games as much as I possibly can, and with a group of core people, but more importantly, when my wife and I used to go on a regular basis, and you're in, you know, the Argos sucked in 2007-2008, but even prior to that, a few years before they won in 2004. When you're in an away stadium and you hush up the crowd, it's nothing greater than being the only away fan there and giving that facial gesture with your finger, shh.
Yeah.
And that's exactly, it's a rush. And that's loud, that speaks louder than any noise you can make when you get that, you know, team or the fans just to quiet down. So does it affect the players, Mike? Yeah, it affects them for the positive parts, the touchdowns.
And
the
negative,
whole
both. Both. So really, it's a wash. And at the end of the day, it comes down to what does the team do?
The players,
with that,
Frank.
Did you
said it.
No, what I was referring to, I didn't mean like in a personal note. I'm talking about for both sides. This is referring to like when there's an intensity and there's a hype electricity in the atmosphere, it brings the play of all who are taking part up. You know, like the intensity ratchets it up. And what the Riders did on Saturday, which I thought was really great, Corey Chamberlain started this thing they call Muddle the Huddle, which is instead of having the fans get loud when the opposing offense gets to the line of scrimmage, they're starting to get the fans cranked up before they even get the plays in while they're still in the huddle to, you know, cause them to have to, you know, do signals and all that. So from that note, that's what I was referring to, and that's why I agree with exactly what John on a personal note, you're right. Guys love playing on the road and shutting up the crowd, but what I was saying was when it comes to Calgary, Saskatchewan, it's like a college game. Like, I don't know if you've seen Oklahoma, Texas, where it's like a 50-50 crowd. Those kind of things, it just, I meant like the game itself. I think will be a good game because both sides will be fired up and just, you know, the whole atmosphere is going to be fantastic. But the reason why the Riders are going to win, and I'm going to make it really clear.
Okay.
The only reason
I
want to
write this
struggled, down. Yeah, the reason they struggled. Everyone has their offensive line.
I got my pen in my hand.
Had,
I'm ready.
Right. Their offensive line had three
will
major injuries on the right side.
Will there be?
No. I'm just – because everyone thinks this is a case of the team being inconsistent. The team is the most talented team in the CFL, hands down. It's not even close. Defense – their defensive line has John Chick, Ricky Foley, Terrius George, Keith Scholigan. They got Alex Hall and Jermaine McElvain coming off the bench, right? Alex Hall leads the league with 15 sacks. Their secondary's got Dwight Anderson, Weldon Brown, as you saw on Saturday, has really been stepping up. Terrell Mays is playing fantastic. He's a guy that a lot of people don't know about. And just
how many of those sacks were at home, and how many of those sacks were at home on the way? That's what I like to know. That's right, because I bet you any money the percentage is higher at home, and probably the majority of them he got them at home. Anyway, carry on.
Alex got those sacks at Winnipeg. What I'm saying is, offensively, you see the talent. Dressler, Getzlaff.
Right.
G-Roy Simons,
right.
Their fourth-string receiver. Corey Sheets, arguably the best running back. Kevin Durant, you could say some people think he's mediocre, some people think he's good, whatever. It's a wash
it's
on
a great
that.
Great quarterback.
Yeah. The reason they struggled was their whole right side of their offensive line was banged up, and they had all these young backups in there, and that's where they were getting decimated at that four-game losing streak where it just seemed like defenses were sending the house every play at Durant. Now when Sheets is back, you saw what happened. Defenses have to back up. They can't be as aggressive because Sheets can burn them with the screenplay or they can do the halfback draw, and it's totally shifted the whole team. They've now been on a winning streak. They're getting on a roll again. They just got back two of their offensive linemen that they've been missing for 6 weeks, and now is when they start to set the tone and get on a roll at the right time heading into the playoffs.
Right.
BC, not worried about them. Calgary, extremely overrated. You tell me who's going to start at quarterback in the playoffs. Is it Tate? Is it Glenn? Is it going to be Mitchell? I mean,
well, right
honestly,
now it'll probably be Kevin Glenn right now.
And that's
hey.
Exactly what I'm hoping for, because Glenn, to
Mike,
me, if you can get pressure
Mike,
on him, you can rattle him.
Dude, that's the scary part. They can change it up. If Saskatchewan has a planned defense against Glenn, they can change it up and put another threat in, which is just a different kind of a threat. It could be Tate with his legs, okay? I mean, you know, that is the scary part about Calgary. They are so deep at QB. Even their fourth stringer is good, okay? So, and all of these guys can run. I think one or two better than the other, but after Durant, and he, to me, would be, I don't know, he's shaking.
Who do they have a quarterback that can come in, Saskatchewan?
Oh, their backup's Drew Willie.
I know, and he got in a couple of times. No, he got in, he played a few games this year, John, and he actually looked fairly good, but he wasn't one of the best backup quarterbacks this year, right, that we've seen.
Right, yeah.
All right, this year, in my opinion, this is going to be the first year. It's funny, you know, as an Argo fan, I'm more than aware that this is more than possible. I remember a quarterback named Joe Barnes that was made fun of by even Argo fans that, you know, he's the only guy that could complete three passes and not get a first down.
Joe couldn't run.
But, John, the point I'm trying to make is that
he could throw. He can
whistle we won
in
the Grey
there,
Cup.
But
the Argos won the Grey Cup. The Argos won the Grey Cup with two quarterbacks. People forget that.
Right.
In BC,
right.
They have two quarterbacks. Now, I think this year is going to be the same thing. John has hit the nail on the head, and I don't think he meant to hit it for this reason, but the Grey Cup this year is going to be won by the team with the two best quarterbacks this year. Because if nothing else that set the table more than anything is the way the quarterbacks have been playing this year and the situation where quarterbacks were forced into playing as first stringers who weren't. And, man, is that going to be a weapon in the Grey Cup this year? Mark my words. Mark my words. And I think, John, you said it right, that this is going to be the year where you're going to actually see four quarterbacks, not because the teams are falling apart, but because mm-hmm. they're going to use it like a change-up. And if it gets like that, John's right. Calgary can throw out a different offensive threat, can change the offense on a whim, you know? And
on a whim.
On a whim. They can change it on a whim. Even the Argos now.
Four times. They could do it four times. And they're
even
all good
the Argos
at it. They're
it.
All...
And the Argos can do it, too. That's what this year is going to be about. And if you can set up your defense, if Calgary can set up their defense knowing that if Durant's in and he's going to stay in, they've got an advantage. But if Saskatchewan sets up a defense, what are they going to do? Set up three defenses depending on which quarterback goes in?
Let's just call it like it is. First off, they haven't had stellar quarterback play. They've pretty much had game management and then depended on John Cornish primarily.
Most of
Kevin Glenn's plays have just been like short passes that his receivers that make plays on, you know? I mean, the stats bear it out.
Aren't you saying, by referring to it as game management, aren't you saying that the quarterback they have sucks?
No, not necessarily sucks. He's not called to do as much. No, I mean, for example, it's like what's his name in Kansas City?
It has nothing to do with the quarterback, Mike. It has nothing to do with the quarterback. Game management is from the sidelines.
No, what I'm saying is, unlike take Ricky Ray, for example, the whole offense is dependent on him and on him making plays, on him making key decisions. For Glenn, it's the opposite. The offense is dependent on John Cornish and on Kevin Glenn getting the ball out quick on short routes.
You have forgotten. Who won MVP of the Grey Cup last year?
Well, Kackert.
Well, has he played much this year?
Well, I mean, that was a one-game off thing. That's just because, I mean, Ray's the best player.
That's not fair. That's not fair. Yes, keep going, John. How many yards did Kackert gain in the playoff games?
Well,
in three playoff games.
Okay, John, it's a question.
The actual numbers don't matter.
It's the classic thing about strategy, right? Like, take the Riders. Right? The reason the Riders were losing.
No, it wasn't a one-off because he played outstanding in the Eastern Final in Montreal. I mean, you know, he got the touchdowns that we needed. He just kind of topped it off with the Grey Cup, and he did fine.
Exactly.
I mean, he shined it up. So the Eastern Final, I mean, let's put it this way, guys. This year's Eastern-Western Final are going to be awesome. Okay?
Yeah. Terrific.
It's just, I mean, the playoffs are just around the corner. I think they're here this weekend. Okay, I think for the Argos, it's a playoff game in a sense where win it and you clinch it. Okay, so that's a playoff motivation. All right, for the Ticats and the Owls, for one of them is stay alive and stay ahead. For the other one, hungry as hell, I want to catch up to you. So that's a playoff motivation kind of. Calgary, you know, and Saskatchewan, we just talked about that. So this weekend, to me, is the first playoff series that are really going off with three games. You know, the other game, not so much. I mean, what's going to happen, BC and Winnipeg? What? Does anybody, you know, like what? So next weekend is going to be one of those scenarios where there might be one meaningful game. The Argos, and I hope for their own sake, won't have to be worried about next week Montreal. And for Montreal, and I hope not for the Ticat fans, it's going to be a scary thing if Montreal comes and plays here. Because you know what, guys, the Argos aren't going to play a full game of starters. Be crazy to, right? So the Eastern Final, these playoffs start right now this weekend, tomorrow, for me anyway.
Yeah, no.
Because we jumped off the Kackert thing real quick, let's just make something clear. Kackert benefits because the defenses are totally focused on Ray. It's like the opposite in Saskatchewan. Durant benefits because defenses are focused on Sheets. Same thing in Calgary. Glenn, Tate, whatever quarterback, they benefit because defenses are keyed on Cornish, right? So Kacker's success is – much of it is dependent on the fact that he doesn't face 8 or 9-man fronts like, you know, teams that have Sheets or Cornish would have to. So for me, Ray is still the more valuable player. Even though Kackert may have had the stats.
I don't agree with you for one very important reason. In the flat, he has a way of making players miss. You know, that's his biggest asset, is that he has a way of making the defense miss him. And Cornish does it from right behind the quarterback with sheer strength. But regardless, you yourself have been talking about Sheets and how great an impact he's going to have on the team. To suggest that Corey Sheets is a bigger impact today than Kackert will be tomorrow, I think that's just insane. Because quite frankly, No, you know what? You know what? You're really being unfair to Cackert, and you know, he's one of my guys. And I'm going to tell you this: he's had a bad string of injuries, and he hasn't had a chance to show what he can do. In fact, what really ticks me off is the last game that he played. He looked like his old self.
Okay.
You know.
So John,
And if he does that, he's as important to the Argos, and I don't want you to diminish his importance to the Argos, as Sheets is to Saskatchewan. Sorry.
Okay. Well, he's a great player, but Ricky Ray is the best player on the Argos. That's not even questionable. On Saskatchewan, Corey Sheets is the best player. That's what I'm saying.
You know, hey, John, shall we remind him? He is aware that the Argos dropped the leading rusher to put Cackert in, and then the team went on a tear after that. Shall we remind him about that? They brought Cackert in.
Are you saying that Cackert is more valuable than Ray? I mean, that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying Cackert's a great player.
You're actually giving me a yes and no answer when I'm trying to tell you that it isn't about yes or no. It's about teamwork. And the way the Argos work, defensively especially, and offensively as well, is teamwork. If you've got Cackert blocking for Ray, Ray is a better quarterback. If you have somebody else in there not blocking, Ray doesn't look so hot, okay? Now, having said that, Ray is a great quarterback. I think he's the best quarterback in the league right now, especially because of experience and history with Calvillo gone, okay? But the fact remains, to win a football game, it's a team approach. There is no running back carrying the team. There is no quarterback carrying the team. Not when you're playing against the better teams. Yeah, when you're playing Winnipeg or Edmonton, because they're so weak. Yeah, a player can beat them on their own, but that's not about the game. That's about the futility of the opposition. And what John's talking about now is all these teams this week, more than any other week in the year, are requiring a win to get something. And it's not going to be because of Ray on his own. I'm sorry. It's not going to be because of Sheets on his own. It's going to be because the teams play well. It's all about teamwork. It's a team game, Mike. Come on.
I agree with that. Well, what I'm saying is it's all about how the defense strategizes against you. Like when Sheets went down, defenses basically were blitzing the Riders on every single play, and Durant was getting beat down, and the offense could never get moving. Soon as Sheets got back, defenses all of a sudden switched their mindset.
But, Mike, weren't you the one that said, you said yourself, I'm going to throw your own words back at you now. You said they had two offensive linemen hurt for 6 weeks.
Right.
Who protects the quarterback? The running back?
Yeah, but when you're blitzing and you're sending an extra man every single play because you're not afraid of the running game whatsoever, that's the whole point.
The offensive linemen just got back
this last weekend.
But yeah, I get that, Mike. That's what I'm trying to say. If your offensive line is weak, blitzing, it becomes even more powerful.
Well, yeah, you know? That too. Also, I mean, you have to choose in defenses. Usually, like they choose what's the key thing they want to stop, like either the pass or the run, depending on what's stronger. So when the Argos come, they're always keen in on we got to shut Ray down, and Cackert basically offsets. He's almost like a changeup. That's what he does. That's how he gets his plays. It's not a consistent running game, you know.
Well, not today. Not the last game because he wasn't there. But I'll tell you, the team's totally different with Cackert in the lineup, and so's Ray. He's an asset for Ray that Ray can hit. And wait till Mike, here's something you want to talk about talent. Okay, I get it. You know, there are teams in history that have not even made the playoffs that had more talent in their leagues and haven't even made the playoffs. It's littered. History is littered with teams that are fantastic on paper, you know, and then my other favorite is, and then you have the guys with character in the dressing room. F that crap. It's what you do on the field when you show up. Forget who has the character in the dressing room. Forget who has the best players on paper. What it comes down to is who's going to be on the field playing the game the way it needs to be played, and where's the weakest link, you know? The Argos, if their injuries, you know, if they heal up, defensively and offensively, and have a reasonable facsimile of what they're able to put out there, minus injuries. You can't have a perfect lineup. You're going to have injuries. But I'm just saying, all things being equal with all the teams, I like Ray's chances with Kackert in the backfield and having Chiles and Inman vertically challenging teams like Saskatchewan, Montreal, and Hamilton.
Speaking of that, where is Chiles? Is he injured?
Yes, he has an upper body injury. He's on my team, so I'm not telling you what's wrong with him, but he has an injury. And, it is the way it is, guys. I mean, I don't like when we focus too much on an individual. I mean, remember what you said about the Heisman Trophy?
Yeah.
Aren't we having the same conversation right now? That, you know, it isn't about, you know, you can win the Heisman Trophy, but what really matters is what the team does. The Heisman Trophy is a whole different kettle of fish. What we're talking about here is when Saskatchewan lines up against Calgary in the final, the West Final, as I think the three of us agree, right?
Right.
Mike, mm-hmm. John, you agree too, right? It'll be Saskatchewan and Calgary in the West Final. We all agree. Sheets, is he going to overpower Calgary? That's a fair suggestion on your part. Will that be enough to win the game? I don't think so, because I happen to think you got to remember the ball's going to end up in the other team's hands too, eh? And I like Cornish head to head with Sheets. Sorry.
It'll be a battle of the running backs, and they're going to go head to head against each other. And why wouldn't they? That is their key weapons, and these guys are going to be more intense. It just brings that extra adrenaline rush you need, especially now that there's a war of words that Sheets has put out there against Cornish. And you guys have read it about his little mocking of him, saying Cornish who, or something like that.
Yeah.
So
that just motivates John. The other guy. That just motivates the other guy.
Sure, it does. Yeah.
It's not the same as when the fans yell something like that. When an opposing player says that, that's a whole different kettle of fish. We just saw it today in hockey. Wasn't it in the Montreal game? Lars Eller said something stupid about Winnipeg.
Yeah. Speaking of hockey, did you guys see that Edmonton, fight between Toronto Edmonton. And Boston?
What's that?
Did you guys
Toronto
see the fight
Boston?
Between... Yeah.
They didn't play.
No, I mean,
Toronto
like, earlier, yeah, earlier this week they played, and I remember there was a fight, and, like, one of the guys was using his stick and just, like, nailing the other guy. I don't know. I thought that was, like, an unwritten rule in hockey fights, that you put your stick down and you put your fists up.
You're talking about an exhibition game with Kessel.
Mike. That wasn't Boston. And Toronto haven't played.
It might have been. They just showed the highlights of that fight on. It was on NBC Sports Network, so I didn't know if it was earlier this year or.
Mike, here's and I'm going to defend Kessel on this one. 6 foot. What was he, John? 6 foot five, 6 foot something like that. The guy's
310.
Yeah, 310 pounds going against a guy who's 5'9", who's a scorer. Who's a scorer? You know what some players said? I wouldn't have hit him on the legs. I wouldn't have hit him on the legs.
Well, the big guy came up to him and said, "I'm gonna take you down. Are you ready? I'm gonna take you down." And then before you know, the little guy heard it and he's saying, "I'm not gonna do anything. I'm gonna start swinging my stick. This guy's gonna beat me up."
What chances Kessel got in a fist fight with that guy? Come on. Again, so let's not digress too much. So at the end of the day, what it comes down to is what goes on the field. But I have to agree with you, and I have to give you, you know, your props, Mike, that Sheets, in your opinion, is that good a running back that he can make a big difference. I can't deny you that. We're going to find out whether you're right. I happen to think that Cornish is a good running back, and I happen to think that the greatest players in the world have been put in a position. Well, let me put it this way to you, and I'll change gears. Eli Manning doesn't look like a very good quarterback today.
And he's getting paid $20 million a year.
And he doesn't look like a really good quarterback right now.
And he's getting paid $20 million. Can you imagine?
$20 million.
He's getting paid like, what's the sum of like five CFL teams? That's crazy.
I know. Well, he's getting paid by the name, right? You know, he did
by the reputation. What
yeah,
if, but
he
now,
did get two Super Bowls.
More than his brother. He's got one more Super Bowl than his brother. You know, so. The only reason I brought him up is you wouldn't think that a quarterback wouldn't have that much of an impact, that he could be that futile. Because it would take a lot of bad things to happen for him to be futile. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know, Frank, we're going to go NFL here. But I'm going to defend Manning. If you guys watch the games, I watch these games. You know, I watch all NFL games, by the way. And his receivers blew like half of those interceptions that happened to him. And you know, the other quarter of them were on tip plays where his receivers blew the route. They went one way.
I agree with
it's
you,
not
John.
Him.
The
Giants are down the tubes.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. Sheets can look good because of the guys. He has the right guys around him, you know? And that doesn't mean that Sheets is – I'm not trying to lessen the importance of Sheets because I'm saying the same thing for Kackert. I'm saying the same thing, you know, last year in the Grey Cup, John Cornish literally disappeared in the Grey Cup.
Yeah, true. Yeah, and he killed
that
man.
Who do you think's tougher, Mike? Mike, who do you think's tougher? Cornish or Sheets?
Oh, for me, it's Sheets. Hands down. I mean, that's not even being biased. I'm just Cornish to me seems like a guy. If you stop him in the beginning, he'll be done.
No, what I mean is this. I mean, let's put it this way. I believe that Sheets, from side to side, the guy just can shift like crazy. Cornish straight up the middle. But as far as toughness, who can take the better hits? I think Cornish is tougher than Sheets. I really do. I think Sheets is faster. He can cut better. He can cut faster than Cornish. Cornish, for some reason, has a better eye for finding the open pocket. But he bulldozes right through it. And he's not a huge guy, but he's got power. And Sheets, he tries to avoid bulldozing.
Finesse.
He tries to dodge.
He's a finesse guy.
And
you also have to factor in that Cornish is Canadian, too, so the non-import status is huge for Calgary as well.
Absolutely.
That too.
And then, you know, Sheets, I would compare Sheets to B.J. Gable. I mean, C.J. Gable.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
Gable's kind of a power back a little bit, too. He's got some power.
Yeah. Different
Sheets
guys.
Is kind of like, Sheets more like Brandon Whitaker, like those speedy, you know, shifty guys that like to make plays in the open field.
I think C.J. Gable's pretty fast, too. He embarrassed the crap out of the Argo defense in Guelph. Hey, John? I mean...
Oh, man.
I think the Argo defense, again, with five fresh guys not expecting to play, didn't practice the whole week, who were thrown in. The Ticats, and like Burris said, he thought it was a joke. He was just licking his chops. They found the holes. They took advantage, and kudos to them. But I don't think they walked all over us. Okay.
No. What I meant, John, was C.J. Gable can embarrass you with his speed.
Yeah.
He's fast. The kid's
and
fast,
his leaping
man.
Ability.
The guy's got,
his gymnastics ability.
Yeah. That too. Well, good luck to them this weekend. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be taking the Ticats.
Guys, speaking of running backs, what happened to Andrew Harris? I mean, wasn't he like one of the best?
Who?
Yeah.
Who?
Andrew Harris.
I don't know.
Yeah. He just disappeared all of a sudden. Like, Stephen Logan got signed, and then the week prior, and he was basically taking all the reps at running back on Saturday.
That's inexplicable. You know, to go from where he was at the beginning of this year to now. But, you know, Mike, that speaks to what I'm talking about here, is that football is not an individual game. Any moron who shows up on the field and thinks that he's all it takes, for number one, he won't last in the dressing room. Number two, he won't last on the field. Number three, who's Andrew Harris? You know
right.
what I mean? Like, it's all over. It's a team sport, man. It's a team sport. I got nothing against... You know, you saying that Sheets is the best running back, you know, but you're not saying that he's all. But you are saying the part I don't like is you suggesting that without him, Saskatchewan is crap. I think losing their offensive lineman for 6 weeks doesn't help either. I mean, that's a contributing factor, my friend. I mean, you know, there's more to a football team than just an individual. I'm sorry. Look at how good Ray looks. Ray looks that good because his guys are helping him to look better than. You know, I guess what I'm trying to say is there's greatness, but then you need the comfort zone of having guys that you can trust around you that you can count on. Ray needs guys that'll hold on to the ball, you know. When, like John says about Kolaros, when it comes to long throws, he makes the receivers look bad because he makes them work too hard to get the ball, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's teamwork, man. It's teamwork. It's teamwork.
Yeah, you're right. It's just like what I meant by that is like Sheets can inspire his teammates because I remember that game against BC at BC Place when a couple of weeks ago when he came back from the injury. The whole first half, the Riders looked terrible. Then Sheets had this huge run where he like shook off four people, broke up the field, went 20 yards, made like six or seven defenders miss him, and it was like a light switch. And from that point on, the offense was humming. And that's what I mean by great players. When great players make great plays, it inspires their teammates. It lifts the morale of the team. And it can be that little extra that they need to push them over the edge. And that's what I meant by with Sheets.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying. I know we agree. Don't worry. We agree. I'm just – we're finesse talking here. Here, let me put it a different way to you. The Argos went on a four-game road trip without Packers. The Argos went on a four-game road trip without Kackert, and they had some help at running back with various players in different. You know, they had some good substitutes. Don't you think that it's a function of the fact that Saskatchewan doesn't have a guy that they can put in that can reasonably cover for the absence of Sheets, as opposed to how important Sheets is? They don't have a serviceable option when he goes down. I think, and that's probably a function of them having they're tight under the cap, or they're under the cap, or they're just over the cap. They don't have the depth, and that's why I don't give Saskatchewan that much of a chance. I don't give them, you know, the blank check that they're going to win against Calgary, because I happen to think that Calgary has better depth. And you're not what you're talking about when you talk about Sheets. You're not talking about how great Sheets is. You're talking about how bad his backup is. Who is his backup?
Who's the backup to John Cornish?
Tate.
Well, there you go, Tate.
Nice. There you go.
But then again, also
He comes in for the 1 yard advance. He comes in for the 1 yard goal line and rushes. I thought it was Tate. I mean, come on. Really? Well, I mean, he's on the field when it's either Cornish or it's Tate. One or the other. That's all I see going on the 1 yard runs, right? I mean,
yep.
So, guys, it's all good. We get it, Mike. You love Sheets, okay? You don't just like the guy. You love the guy. And that's good. And I can see why. He's a talent. But we're going to go back to this weekend coming up. It's hard to call on this one. I'm going to give it, again, an upper edge to the Calgary side. The Riders have to prove it to me, and they got to prove it to themselves. And they are going to get, the playoff game, finishing in second. They're going to get a home playoff game. But it's going to be tough. It's going to be interesting, guys. It's going to be a really interesting game between these two teams this weekend. Yeah.
So who are you guys picking then for Hamilton and Montreal?
Montreal. It's a given. Montreal's going to beat Hamilton.
Okay.
Yeah.
Same with you, John.
I think Montreal's going
to
beat Hamilton
I hate to say it. I agree with Frank. Yeah, I hate to say it, but I think Ticat fans are going to be disappointed.
Are you guys saying they're going to get the number 2 seed then as well?
Now that's going to be interesting with Montreal coming here. Whoo! And, if Montreal wins and there is a tiebreaker between the Cats and Montreal, because Montreal bet them, I think, in the series over the year.
Well, because the next two – there's three games they play, John, and they're playing back-to-back. And I think Hamilton won the first game. So
I'll just figure it out.
Whoever wins this weekend
gets
a tiebreaker.
Right. So I just figured out how it's going to lay out. It's going to be a 1-2-3 Toronto, Montreal, Hamilton. And it's going to be a larger crowd than it could fit in Guelph for the home playoff game, which will help the CFL, and they'll probably like that. And then the Ticats will win in Montreal, and they will play in the Eastern Final in Toronto.
Nice.
Like it?
Yeah,
I like it.
Perfect. But I still want to conclude the conversation we had before, Mike. Do you remember the three Argo players won awards at the Grey Cup? Were any of them Ricky Ray?
Okay, so in your opinion, so are you telling me that Chad Owens is more important to the Argos than Ricky Ray?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Right.
What I am saying,
that means that award is irrelevant.
The point I'm trying to make is that there were three other players, and Chad Owens wasn't one of them, okay? You know, there were three players that were more important to the Argos as far as the people who watched the game were concerned. And that doesn't mean that Ray's less important.
I'm going to call a draw on this one. You're both right, and you have both good points, and there's a draw here.
Okay.
You're both winners.
Okay, thanks. all right, now joining us now is Robbie J. Emery. Robbie, how's it going?
Hey, what's up, boys?
Hey, how you doing, Robbie?
How about
what's
them
going
tie cats?
On?
We were just making fun of the tie cats.
Tie cats. Tie cats are going to kick ass this year, man.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Come on.
Hey,
come on, John. Okay, hold on one here. Flag thrown right up in the air here.
Oh.
John, did you not say you're a Tie Cat fan, but the Tie Cats suck?
Whoa.
No. Just agree with me. Say
what?
Yes or no.
What?
15 yards
okay.
on that one.
No.
Hey, Robbie,
John.
Hey, Robbie,
John.
Let me catch you up, Robbie. That night when you heard that recording from after
matter.
That game, I was mocking, and you didn't get it. I was mocking being a fan, and I was saying it as a joke, and you for the whole show, we were trying to tell you, that wasn't a Tie Cat fan. That was just me pretending I'm a Tie Cat fan, and I was saying, I love
very
the
loyal
Tie Cats, but I think
fan.
They suck. So I was just being what I was just doing what a Tie Cat fan would do if he had a good sense of humor.
You know what, dude?
So,
that hurt my feelings.
Because you really thought it was a Tie Cat fan saying it, right?
Yeah, bro. Come on. You know, it was really funny because I went to a pool hall we have here in Ottawa, and I was wearing my Tie Cat hat, my Tie Cat sweater.
What's the name of the pool hall? What's the name of the pool hall,
Tailgaters.
Robbie? Tailgaters. Good place, Tailgaters. I love that place.
It is. It's going to be the Red Blacks' number one hangout spot.
Right on.
So I was in there, and I was just, you know, playing pool, winning a few games, losing a few games, and I look over, and I see a guy wearing a Tie Cat shirt. So I'm like, yo, there's my fucking, oh, sorry, there's my
soulmate.
Cousin. Soulmate. There's my cousin.
Soulmate.
So I walk over to him, I'm like, yo, Tie Cat fan. Right on, bro. You know, he's like, yeah, well, you know, my cousin or my uncle or whatever is Marcel Desjardins, not Desjardins, Belfoy. I'm like, really? I'm like, that's cool, man. You know, so we chatted up a bit about it, and he's pulling for the Tie Cats, but it was really weird because he says, I think I'm a Winnipeg fan now. I'm like, are you kidding me? Come on, where's Winnipeg going this year? Winnipeg's going nowhere this year. But to sit in the basement and cry.
That's a great story, Robbie.
Wow. I'm just.
Hey, what was the guy's name that you were playing pool with there? Your friend.
I don't know.
Oh God, John's gonna know him too.
Yeah, John probably knows everybody around.
Well, we're gonna hang out. We're gonna hang out at that bar that you mentioned when the Argos come and play you. Okay.
Oh,
so
you know what? We have to.
Oh, yeah, make sure you tell the manager to put at least a couple tables aside just for our little group
He told me tonight to send an email to Marcel Desjardins about having, like, a red-black thing. Actually, you guys are going to come down for this. Grey Cup weekend. Well, Grey Cup Sunday, the 22nd, I believe, or the 23rd. There's gonna
I'm
going
to go
big,
to Ottawa for that one.
There's going to be big Super Bowl party, Super Bowl, Grey Cup party over at Tailgaters that day.
Is Mike invited too?
Everyone's
nice.
Invited. Everyone's invited.
Right,
Mike, you can even come down, bro. All
right.
Come check out Canada for a couple days or whatever.
So, Mike,
yeah.
What do you think, Robbie? We were giving our predictions here. What do you think this weekend's games are going to look like since we only got 6 minutes left, right, Frank?
Okay. I'm looking at it right now. We got
sounds right.
Toronto, Winnipeg. I'm saying Toronto's going to win that one easy.
What? Ding,
what?
Ding, 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 ding.
Yep.
Next.
Upset of the century.
Even though Winnipeg beat Montreal a couple weeks ago, but, you know, Toronto's going to win that one. BC and Edmonton. I would love to see Edmonton win that.
That's a snoozer.
But I think BC is going to take that one.
No
Montreal,
one's watching
Hamilton.
It.
You already know that Hamilton's going to win that one.
Hard to believe that.
Calgary, Saskatchewan. You know what? There's no quarterback in the CFL that's better than Darian Durant, or whatever you want to call him.
Preaching to the choir.
And he's got four sheets. He's got Getzlev. He's got plenty of players to throw to hand off to everything. So, yeah, I'm taking Saskatchewan.
Great
and
decision
I still
of your
think
life.
The best running back Saskatchewan ever had was George Reed, but after him was Darren Joseph.
Was who?
George Reed.
No, who's after him?
And Darren Joseph.
Darren Joseph, okay.
DJ, my boy.
All right.
All right, so, okay. So, Robbie, who are going to be in the finals, East and West?
East is going to be Hamilton. West is going to be Saskatchewan.
No. Okay, the other half of the Eastern and Western finals. You're saying who's going to win. But who are they going to beat? Who is Hamilton going to beat?
They're going to beat Toronto.
Ouch.
Okay. And Saskatchewan's going to beat
BC in the final.
You don't think Calgary is?
No, they don't got jack shit, man.
So
Robbie, pass over that crack pipe. Give me that crack pipe. That's enough for you. Pass it over.
You know what, John? I'm bringing it to Toronto for you,
my friend. Pass it over to me.
No more crack for you. No more. You're cut off. That's it. Robbie,
I am the soup Nazi.
You kick my
ass. No more soup
you
for you.
You kick my cat.
No more soup for you.
How dare you? You kick
no
my
soup
cat.
For you. Okay. All right, Robbie, now that we have all the respect in the world for your choices, now finally we arrive at – we only have a guys – no more than a minute each, guys. Okay, so the Grey Cup this year, John.
I'm going to give my minute to Robbie. You go for it, Robbie.
No, but who do you –
Great Cup. Come on, bro. You know what I'm saying.
I want to say Argos going to win tomorrow. You guys have a great night. Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Mike.
Oh.
Thank you, Robbie. Always nice talking to you. You finish it off. You can mute me, Frankie. Adios, amigos. See you tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right. Have to take it easy, man.
Okay.
Yeah,
so John
doesn't
want to make a decision on that one just yet. So,
no,
Mike,
who do you think
is going to win the Grey Cup, Mike, at this point? Looking at the way things are now, and you can change your opinion at the end of the season, but at this point, predictably, I know what your answer is going to be, but that's because you're betting on the team improving even more, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm rooting for the Riders, but from my head tells me it's the Argos. I think the Argos are going to win the Grey Cup.
Well, that's... Great. Okay. How about you, Mikey? Robbie?
Well, you know what? I would love it to dear if Hamilton won it. But you know what? To me, in my books, you guys are just going to be like, what the fuck? Saskatchewan, like, there's not a better... offensive.
We're running out of time, Mikey. Robbie, we're running out of time.
Yeah,
who's going to win?
There's not a better compact offense than Saskatchewan's got.
Okay, so you say
Saskatchewan.
I'm saying Montreal's going to win the Grey Cup this year.
Whoa. Wow.
They won't. You know why? Because they don't have Cavillo.
They don't need him. I think we're going to see greatness. We're going to see the beginning of greatness, and I hope they lose. I want the Argos to win, but I happen to think that Montreal with the defense, you know, the old adage is that offenses win games, defenses win championships.
Yeah, well, how come Montreal's defense didn't pull up when Winnipeg beat them?
Oh, well, there you go.
What's up with that?
Well, Winnipeg has a pretty good defense.
Yeah, well.
Well, Robbie, it was great having you on. Thanks for being on, and we'll talk to you later. Okay, buddy?
All right, buddy. Take care.
You too. All the best. Mike, thank you for being on, and I appreciate your contribution.
All right. Thanks for having me, John.
You're welcome.
Sorry, Frank.
Buddy.
Appreciate it.
No
yep, good night.
Right, yep, bye. Okay, you've been listening to Candid Frank Live on Blog Talk Radio, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday between 10 and 12. We'll be discussing changing the time. See you later. Have a great night. And he didn't say goodbye, Cleveland.